This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
God, full of mercy, who dwells on high, grant fitting rest on the wings of the divine presence to the holy and pure, the brave, for the souls of the holy ones, men, women, and children, who were killed on October 7th. For this we pray, for the ascent of their souls, may they rest in the Garden of Eden. May you shelter them in the shadow of your wings forever, and may their souls be bound up in the bond of everlasting life. May they rest in peace, and we say amen.
A rabbi offers a prayer at the White House today in remembrance of the events that took place 1 year ago on October 7th in Israel. Just the absolute horrific atrocities that were experienced by those people who are living their lives at music festivals, in their homes. 1 year ago, it's pretty amazing to look back and think about exactly what was experienced that day. The details, if you've never really heard about the details, I'm talking about the details of what Hamas exacted against the Israeli people. It's unimaginable to be on this end of it and to understand exactly what they were willing to do out of pure hatred for those people who were living their lives in Israel. And it's important that we remember what took place that day, because you cannot measure the actions of today, of Israel and what they're moving through today. You cannot measure those actions without an understanding of what actually did take place in Israel 1 year ago.
An unprecedented and coordinated attack against Israel is taking place right now. This has been a constant scene along the Gaza border. We're hearing horrific stories of people just grabbing whatever weapon they had at home and trying to fight off the militants that were entering their communities.
Just a few hours ago, a woman said that she received a phone call from her niece, who's 8 years old, and said she's hiding inside her kibbutz. They have killed mommy and daddy. She's hiding with her four-year-old brother underneath a bed. They've been there for hours. No one's coming to get them.
A Hamas terrorist stood in the middle of the road and shot him while he was driving an ambulance. He was going to save lives, and he was killed on his way.
I think it's horrific to look back on those moments and to understand. I mean, that's what you heard there is the G-rated version of what actually took place in Israel. And when you understand that the people of Israel are living in fear of their existence as a people, then everything else starts to make a little bit more sense. We'll speak with Lieutenant Colonel Dakota Wood when we come back in about 15 minutes from now. So don't go away. We're going to get his... I'm going to ask him to explain to you and to me, what does somebody like Dakota Wood want us to know about what took place on October 7th? And what needs to happen to ensure that that never happens again? We'll find out from a man who knows a few things about this, certainly as an expert more than I do. In the meantime, I can't help but notice, leading into the show today, I'm watching Fox News here in the studio, listening to it on my way into the station, and, you know, we've talked so much about Hurricane Helene. We've talked about how it has ravaged the East Coast. I think it said 5 states. That's the number off the top of my head. We've watched as the help has not come to the American people who desperately need it. We've seen the reaction from this administration, and it's just simply not enough. If they feel as though they're doing something, the answer is that it's not enough. Joe Biden spoke on it last week.
There have obviously been a number of crises that the country has been facing over the past several days with the hurricane, with the port strike, with the situation in the Middle East. Can you talk about how your vice president, who is running for the presidency, has worked on these crises and what role she has played over the past several days?
Well, I'm in constant contact with her. She's aware we're singing from the same song sheet. She helped pass all the laws that are being employed now. She was a major player in everything we've done, including passage of legislation which we were told we could never pass. And so she's been, and her staff is interlocked with mine in terms of all the things we're doing.
He couldn't have left any room there. There's no room between Joe Biden and Kamala Harris in the response to specifically in this question that was asked is the actions of the Biden-Harris administration on response to hurricane relief, on the port strike, on the issues that have faced this administration. The Biden-Harris administration is exactly that. It's the Biden-Harris administration. J.D. Vance had something to say about their hurricane relief.
Yeah, well, I mean, first of all, you have to separate what people are saying. They'll say, well, there's a bucket of money in FEMA that's gone to illegal aliens, and that's somehow separate than the bucket of money that should by right go to American citizens. I think that misses the fundamental point that the Biden-Harris administration has turned FEMA effectively into an agency that helps to resettle and helps to deal with illegal immigration.
He makes a fantastic point there. Knowing that this administration has willfully used FEMA emergency money to support people who are coming here illegally through asylum, through whatever means that the Biden-Harris administration has set up for them to have some sort of fabricated legal status here, if even. But the money coming out of the pockets of North Carolinians, South Carolinians, Georgians, Floridians, the dollars that are coming out of their pockets are very much so, in fact, going to house and home people who have come across the Biden-Harris open border. That is a fact of the matter. Now, some people might say, no, it's different. It's a different funding base. It's not the emergency, the storm recovery. These are very separate things. Well, I give you Corinne Jean-Pierre in 2022.
The administrators have been meeting with city officials on site to coordinate available federal support from FEMA and other federal agencies. Funding is also available through FEMA's emergency food and shelter program to eligible local governments and non-for-profit organizations.
Did you hear that? Did you hear what Corinne Jean-Pierre just said there? This is in 2022. One more time.
City officials on site to coordinate available federal support from FEMA and other federal agencies. Funding is also available through FEMA's emergency food and shelter program.
The emergency food and shelter program, that those monies have been made available to these migrants. And now they're running out of money. But if you're the federal government, and especially if you're a big government Democrat, or even worse, a big government Republican, and you feel like you've always got a check to write because you can always go back to the money tree, you know, the one that comes from the taxpayer, that comes from you, paying higher prices at the gas pump, paying higher prices at the grocery store, paying higher prices everywhere you go for everything. If we have another emergency, they need the money. We'll just go back to the taxpayers to get it. But yet we're reallocating funds for emergency food and shelter in 2022, Corinne Jean-Pierre says, from the White House press secretary podium. Those dollars are going to help the migrants. And now, what do we do? You ask FEMA and they say we have enough money to fund the recovery effort for Helene. Well, FEMA. Well, Corinne Jean-Pierre, I want to ask you a question because I'm looking at foxweather.com right now. And the news has just come in the last, I don't know, maybe hour, 90 minutes or so, that Hurricane Milton, which if you haven't heard that name yet, get acquainted with it because it's barreling towards Florida. It's going to slice right through Florida if the trajectory is correct. And it has now been elevated to a Category 5 hurricane. Florida seems to be able to handle hurricanes better than most. They deal with them much more frequently than, I don't know, the people in Appalachia. They understand how to brace themselves for this, but they also respect the gravity of the strength of these hurricanes. And a Cat 5 hurricane crossing over Florida right after Helene swung through it just about 10 days ago. Fox Weather reports that Hurricane Milton has strengthened into a Category 5 hurricane as the monster storm continues to spin across the warm waters of the Gulf of Mexico on a path towards Florida, where it will bring the risk of life-threatening storm surge, destructive winds, and flooding rain. According to the NHC, maximum sustained winds within Milton increased to 160 miles an hour. And as the potentially deadly storm continues its path towards Florida, millions of people across the region are preparing for life-threatening impacts such as a deadly storm surge, destructive winds, and flooding rain. The people who are supposed to be helping the American people on behalf of the American people with the funds of the American people are quite potentially literally asleep. Potentially at the wheel. And it's very important to listen to the President of the United States. Listen, you can't have it both ways. One of two things is true. Either the President of the United States knows exactly what he's doing, knows exactly what he's saying, knows exactly the decisions he's making and the gravity they have on the American people when he says that they are singing exactly from the same song page and that they are inseparable in the Joe Biden, Kamala Harris administration, that they talk to each other in constant contact. Either the President has his wits about him or he does not. And if he does not, why the hell is he still the President of the United States? Either he knows what he's saying and he's correct in that he and Kamala Harris are in lockstep, or he's not. And if he's not, get him out of there. If Kamala Harris is so different and she wants to be the President of the United States and she wants to separate herself from some of the policies of the Biden administration, now would be the time. Kamala, where are you? Do you have the guts to stand up to even the person who is your boss to say that this is not the way we should do things? Do you have the guts to say to the American people, no, we should be doing it differently? If you don't have the guts to stand up to Joe Biden, how are you going to handle Putin? How are you going to handle Kim Jong-un? How are you going to handle President Xi? How are you going to handle Mexico when you've got to try to deal with Mexico, where pretty much everybody comes through in order to get into country? Oh, except for the people who you're literally flying in so that they can skip Mexico and the very complicated jaunt to get here. Let's just give them a plane ticket. Do you know that the United States is flying people into our country? That they don't even have to go through the process, the trek to come across the southern border. We fly them here. Is that a policy that you'd like to separate yourself from the Biden administration, Vice President Harris? Now's the time to start talking. We're all listening. We're all waiting to see why it is that you're running for president and why what you would do as the President of the United States, the Commander in Chief, would be just a little bit different than what we're currently dealing with right now, because what we're dealing with right now, quite frankly, sucks. And we need a change. Just ask Tim Walz. We can't do this for 4 more years. What's different, Vice President Harris? How are you different? Is the President of the United States of America, Joe Biden, not within his right mind when he says that you are in lockstep? If he is not within his right mind, you as the Vice President should be leading the charge on the 25th Amendment. Which is it? Pick one. Pick the honest one. Pick the one that's based and rooted in truth. America is craving truth right now. Lieutenant Colonel Dakota Wood will be with us when we return, and we're going to talk to him about the 1 year anniversary of October 7th, how we got here, how did that event actually come to be, and where are we 1 year later as a globe? I'd love to know from Dakota Wood. The YouTube live chat poll, we need your thoughts on this, because I keep hearing this from people who are detractors of Donald Trump, and I just kind of want to know how you feel about it. The YouTube live chat poll for today is, why is Donald Trump running for president? Is it for the country? Or is Donald Trump simply running for himself? Andy Fry YouTube channel. To vote, Dakota Wood on The Andy Fry Show when we return.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews, or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The aid that we have given Israel allowed Israel to defend itself against 200 ballistic missiles that were just meant to attack the Israelis and the people of Israel. And when we think about the threat that Hamas, Hezbollah presents, Iran, I think that it is without any question our imperative to do what we can to allow Israel to defend itself against those kinds of attacks. Now, the work that we do diplomatically with the leadership of Israel is an ongoing pursuit around making clear our principles, which include the need for humanitarian aid, the need for this war to end, the need for a deal to be done which would release the hostages and create a ceasefire. And we're not going to stop in terms of putting that pressure.
So Kamala Harris wants a ceasefire, and she's trying to claim that she understands exactly how this Middle Eastern conflict actually is, how it came to existence and what it is right now. It is important to remember, and she articulated it there, that there are still hostage. There's still four American hostages, as I understand it, that were taken a year ago. They've been held for a year. She's saying that they're doing what they can to try to bring this conflict to the conclusion of a ceasefire. And I have to ask, is it even possible to pressure Israel to come to the conclusion where a ceasefire would actually end up happening? Yes, Israel seems to be launching attacks against their enemies, but they seem to be retaliatory perpetually. Let's get to somebody who really knows what they're talking about when it comes to this conflict. Our friend, Lieutenant Colonel Dakota Wood, back with us once again. We're excited to have you back. Dakota, thank you for being with us here today. A very solemn day as we remember the 1 year marking of the terrible, horrific attacks in Israel on October 7th.
Yeah, I mean, these anniversaries are just tragic reminders. Everything that you were saying and implying, that you have to have a day thinking back a year where 1,200 people just weren't murdered, but tortured, burned, baked in ovens, brutally raped, decapitated. I mean, it was just absolutely horrific. And 250 or so taken hostage, many of those killed, some of them rescued, and still around 100 plus or minus a few, they're still being held. So in terms of the leading question you had about a negotiated settlement or ceasefire, it isn't going to happen. So long as Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran pledge the destruction, right, the absolute elimination of the state of Israel, what else can Israel do? I mean, how do you stop fighting in your end when even Hamas, as decimated as it's become, on today, that 1 year anniversary, launched additional attacks from the Gaza Strip? I mean, how do you deal with that kind of world? And I think the Israelis are really doing the only thing that they can do for the foreseeable future.
So we're speaking with Lieutenant Colonel Dakota Wood. What did Israel do leading up to October 7th to provoke this type of attack from Hamas? Like, what led into that horrific attack to cause that to have to be part of the existence over there in the Middle East?
I'm being sarcastic here, but they showed reasonableness and patience and tolerance. I mean, they withdrew from the Gaza Strip in 2005, so almost 20 years ago. It's been under the full governance of some form of Palestinian authority. Hamas grabbed power in the Gaza Strip by brutally attacking, using violence against its own people, as rival political parties. So after that occurred, Israel still opened the door. Thousands of Gazans had employment in Israel proper, sending about $2 million, I think, a day or so back into the Gaza Strip area. Any of them could participate in the Israeli economy. The same thing for folks from Lebanon, you know, engaging in exchange with Israel. You could be an Arab, a Muslim, a Palestinian in the state of Israel and hold political office, participate in the economy, you know, voting rights as a citizen, all that stuff, right? So there weren't any attacks into southern Lebanon other than in response to attacks from Hezbollah, a daily basis for the past year from southern Lebanon. And they've been fighting kind of a running war with Hezbollah even since 2005, had a big battle in 2006. So Israel has been under assault from all these folks, from Iranian-sponsored groups in Syria for a very long time. And they've tried to accommodate the global community to include pressure from the United States to be reasonable, to be conciliatory, to see to appeasement, and none of their neighbors will abide by those same rules.
So, you know, I think about the attacks that just kind of keep creeping up. We listened to Donald Trump talk about how he eliminated ISIS, but then it comes back. And we had the Taliban at bay, but now it's back in a very aggressive way towards peace and prosperity in that region of the world. What has to be done in order to eliminate it for good? Is it possible to eliminate terrorism from the world for good? And if it's not possible to eliminate it, how do you keep it contained so that they don't have the ability to terrorize the world?
Well, you can't eliminate it, but you create environments that are intolerant of that or of it. And by that, I mean the people that would host the groups that, you know, have the fighters and have this passion for using violence, those populations have to be intolerant of that kind of nonsense. So where you have a Gazan population, Palestinians in the West Bank, the Syrians under Bashar al-Assad, the Iranian people, so long as they tolerate or support forms of government and political parties and ideologies from which this kind of violence comes, it's almost impossible for an external actor like Israel or the United States to completely eliminate that. So you mentioned the Islamic State was only beaten back because of American military power. I mean, was there any diplomacy, you know, out of Washington, D.C. or Paris or Berlin that brought Islamic State to the negotiating table and they found some kind of a peaceful way forward? I mean, it didn't happen. You weren't going to negotiate a settlement with Soviet communism or with Nazi Germany or Imperial Japan in the 1940s. So sometimes the only thing that does work is sheer brutal military power. And you beat your enemy into submission, and I hate to say it that way, but the population gets exhausted, and they finally conclude that this use of violence to achieve a political end is not the way to go about it. So, you know, these discussions have to be two-way, but that means that both parties have to agree that that is the fruitful way forward.
Yeah. So the people who are in opposition, just to be very specific here, sure, Hamas has been the upfront and personal one as of late, but we've seen Hezbollah pushing against Israel and, of course, being funded by Iran. What's their goal? What would satisfy their efforts? How do they know that they've won? It's done. It's over.
Well, yeah, I mean, this chant that you see on college campuses, you know, from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free. That means from the Jordan River all the way west to the Mediterranean Sea, which means that the elimination of Israel as a state, as a nation. And that would all revert to pre-1922 Palestinian territory, which ignored, you know, the hundreds and thousands of years before that when the Jews lived there, etc. But what they're looking for is that Israel ceases to exist as a modern state, and that the Palestinians, under whatever leadership, you know, you can remember Yasser Arafat back in the 60s and 70s, right, that would be a Palestinian land, and they would somehow or other live there peacefully because their Jewish enemies would be gone. I mean, that is their desired state, and they have stated that as their formal policy for decades.
So if you're a Jewish person living as a citizen in Israel right now, what happens to you if the goal is attained, if the Hamas goal, if Iran's goal is attained from the river to the sea? How did the Jewish people in Israel fit into that plan?
They would fit into a Palestinian-controlled state, just as Jews fit into Iraq, Syria, maybe Saudi Arabia. There's a handful of Jews that live there and try to observe, you know, their traditions and religion and all that. So in other words, you are an absolute minority with no political power, and you suffer the whims of the majority religious factions around you. So it would be that you are a stateless entity. And keep in mind that when you look at the world map, there are 50 Muslim-majority countries around the world, many of them like 80 or 90% Muslim. There's only one Jewish state, and that's the country of Israel. So if you don't have an Israel, then the Jews just become a displaced people again with no homeland, and they will always be subject to whatever abuses or injustices or minority status that they would have to live in any given country.
Do these terrorist organizations that want the river to the sea goal to be attained, do they want to live peacefully with Jewish people?
No, there is an absolute hatred, and it goes back to the time of Abraham, Isaac and Jacob, right?
Yes.
Where you had the division between the two brothers, right? Yep. And one becomes the Arab people in general. I mean, we're talking about big swaths, and the other the Jewish people that go up into modern-day Israel. So it goes back centuries, this enmity, and it becomes useful on the Muslim side. And again, I'm painting a very broad brush here, between Sunni and Shia, the militant factions, to use the Jews as kind of a whipping post, right? That everybody can agree to hate the Jews, just like everybody can agree to hate, you know, the United States, because it buttresses your standing within your own domestic community. Mm. You know, so you offset this conflict between Shia and Sunni by turning to the left and everybody hates Israel, right? So if you can prove that you can kill more Jews or eliminate the country or hurt the country of Israel, then it increases or enhances your standing and your stature, and you get more support. So, there's a couple, three different lines of argument on that.
We're speaking with Lieutenant Colonel Dakota Wood. You brought up the United States and how they could be considered a pariah in these same sort of circles that hate Israel, of course. We have an election coming up. I think that it's pretty clear that the Kamala Harris approach is very similar, if not exactly the same, as the Joe Biden approach. Mm-hmm. Donald Trump's approach would be much different. It was when he was in office. You would presume that he would take a much different approach when he would take office once again, be inaugurated in January. How quickly is the stage reset if a new administration in the United States of America, an ocean away, is reestablished?
Almost overnight. I mean, think about the revolution that occurred in Iran, and the Iranian revolutionary groups took hostage a number of Americans during the Carter administration, and they held them for a little over a year. And it wasn't until Ronald Reagan was elected to office, the day after he took office, those hostages were released because they knew that Reagan was going to come in and just bomb the heck out of the Ayatollah. The same thing that the Obama administration negotiated, freeing up billions and billions of dollars to try to buy a favorable, you know, approach from Iran to somehow truncate its nuclear program. All the reporting is in on that in the negotiations, and to the extent that the JCPOA, you know, the Iran nuke deal, was in place, the Iranians were violating that anyway, you know, continuing to add centrifuges, enrich uranium far in excess of any kind of civilian nuclear program, which was always less than 10%. Now they're at 60%, heading toward 90. So they were violating it at that time. Any dollar that went into Iran, supposedly for food or medical supplies or whatever, it just freed up an Iranian equivalent of money to send to Hamas or Hezbollah or any other group that wanted surrogates, you know, to battle Israel or the United States. So this is an Obama administration approach where diplomacy leads with no visible effect, and it incentivizes Iran and its ilk to behave as aggressively as possible, and we just try to buy them off more. Trump comes in, and if you remember, it was a full pressure campaign on Iran, and it boxed them in, right? You put on more sanctions and forbade, you know, the sale of oil and all these other sorts of things. And then the Biden team comes in and tries to resurrect the Obama era, you know, nuclear deal. And so, you know, Iran comes back in full-throated in its support to a terrorist function. So I think that you would see in a Harris administration that same approach, which is repeatedly shown to have failed, incentivizes bad behavior, and it makes the United States look weak. You would see the opposite of that with the Trump administration.
Dakota Wood, thank you so much for the time today. It's an important day, and we wanted to mark it by acknowledging what actually took place, because I think that the politics and the tug of war over this issue in an election season definitely makes us forget about some of the truths, the atrocities that took place a year ago. So we thank you for your expertise.
Appreciate that. Thanks for having me on, and thanks for bringing this up. So just a critically important issue.
Yes, I agree. Thank you so much. We'll speak to you again soon.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Right.
Dakota Wood, Lieutenant Colonel Dakota Wood. Grateful to have him back on the show with us. We're going to take a quick break. Wiggins America, when we come back, it's the Monday Roundup, the wildest ride in the wilderness, the Midwest wilderness, that is, downtown St. Louis, basically. Let's take a quick break. Ryan Wiggins in studio with Wiggins America next. Commenting, they're ready to see your outfit of the day.
Oh yeah,
I kind of think that maybe we're going to do a social media thing today, or like starting today.
Are we? Does this qualify? Can you see it?
Big Deborah.
There we go, Big Deborah. No little Debbie today. It's Big Deborah. And this was a very kind gift from Brad Range for my birthday.
Anybody comment on that shirt today?
I'm going to be honest,
when I said that, I hadn't seen what you were wearing.
Really?
So I didn't know that's what you were
wearing. You know what it was?
No, I just thought you were wearing a flannel shirt.
There have been more people comment on the shirt than not.
Yeah.
So around the office, I'd have to count those who didn't comment on it.
We don't have any Debras here, right? Well,
I don't think so.
Debbie, but that's different.
Well, kind of. I mean, it's based on Little Debbie.
Debbie Monterey?
Yeah. But
that's different.
But I mean, Debbie is what the joke is based on. It's Little Debbie. So.
I'm trying to give you a little cover from Debbie Monterey.
Don't worry about it.
But he insists. So
I haven't walked through the camel excuse room yet.
Well, it might be hard to tell on the stream also, but what makes her Big Deborah is she has a pretty nice double chin going on.
Yeah, she definitely has had a oatmeal cream pie or seven.
Yeah. So just a reminder to get your Little Debbies before the holidays.
Before Big Deborah.
I have to admit, I didn't know where that sentence was going when I started it.
Yeah, we could tell.
This is the Monday Roundup. So these are the stories that are like second page, third page, maybe even some fourth pagers that you've missed over the weekend. The first one, though, federal appeals court allows betting on elections, ruling against the government. So apparently it was legally in a gray area until now. A federal appeals court has declined to block a lower court's decision that allowed betting on 2024 federal elections as of last week. The owner of the betting company that was in the lawsuit said U.S. presidential election markets are legal, official, finally, you can bet on elections. I'm not sure how I feel about this or whether I have strong opinions one way or another, but I'm sure some people do. So there you go. It is legal to bet on elections now.
My thoughts exactly. It's like, I don't know how I feel about this, because anytime there's betting, things go sideways real fast. But I don't know that politics can't go sideways real fast either way.
Yeah. Are we going to have a lot of situations where people are like voting for Trump, but they're putting money down on Kamala, or the other way around? Are you going to be kind of like twisted inside where you're not sure who you hope wins, even if you're voting for the opposite person you're betting for?
If you lose a bet, if you're betting on Kamala Harris and you lose that bet, you still win.
This is true.
So,
but you also lose.
It's a matter of perspective, Ethan.
Yeah. Well, it depends how much money you got down.
Exactly.
Maybe I should bet so big on Kamala Harris that if she wins, I win a lot of money.
Yeah.
Personally. But if she loses, then we all win together, and that's win-win.
Yeah.
Team player. That's
or
what I heard.
I guess you could hear it lose-lose, but that's not how I would see it.
Bet whatever you'd estimate you'd gain in taxes with the Trump presidency.
She's probably going to take it all anyway.
You just break it.
In the end, I'm probably just making her richer.
She's going to pass a law that taxes winnings on election bets.
My first act as president, signing from the Resolute desk, is taking Annie's bet money. I've only ever bet on one thing ever, and it was her winning, and she's going to steal it.
Specifically you.
Yeah.
I don't know that that's legal.
I do personally feel attacked by Kamala Harris, but go on.
Okay, next one. There we go.
Yeehaw.
All the details you need to know about the McDonald's Chicken Big Mac are here. And all the details are they are replacing the meat with chicken. There is a 5-page article about it, but you don't need to know much else other than Chicken Big Macs are coming to McDonald's near you. And instead of having the beef patties, you have chicken patties.
I've got
is
a question.
Is it real chicken or is it... fake chicken? Is it like a McChicken chicken?
That's a good question. Like, is it minced chicken or is it a chicken breast?
Not minced.
What do you call it?
Fake chicken.
Fake chicken? I didn't know they were allowed fake to serve fake chicken. This is fake chicken now?
The kind with the feet in it.
That's real chicken. That shows that it was real not too long ago.
Yeah, let's talk about your refined palate and fast food as evidence of quality white meat chicken breast chicken on a sandwich. What do you consider to be like real chicken?
I would say, you know, Chick-fil-A.
If it's like brown.
The
color.
Popeye's sandwich, they have like a full chicken breast. You know, it's not pulled apart and then processed.
And so, created into something else.
Yeah, but it's still chicken. It's just, you're probably eating beak.
Just be... just, okay. Pink slime.
Yeah,
Google it.
Yeah. Exactly. So my guess is that this is probably a chicken patty. I don't think you're getting like a full chicken breast in there twice in one sandwich. But it, just so you know, it is coming soon, and you can try it soon.
Pass.
Okay. Anybody else? You going to try this?
Probably not.
I'm
no.
pretty sure I've already tried this.
You've created it
at
home?
Yeah, not at home, but I've ordered Big Macs like that.
Wait,
what do you mean?
What do you mean? Yeah, what does this mean?
You don't think I got to 330 pounds by eating, like, vegetables, do you? I used to experiment at fast food restaurants. This stuff was boring.
What would you tell them at the window? That's what I want to know.
Can you give me a Big Mac, but substitute McChicken patties on it instead of beef?
And they would do it?
Yeah! You've got to pay for the extra whatever the patties are, but they definitely do it.
So they're charging for you for a Big Mac, and then
the
patties on top of it.
Yeah, it was a waste of money.
Hmm. Wow. Okay, well, let's stick with some food news then. Endless Shrimp at Red Lobster. The new CEO says it wasn't just an internet rumor.
This is your food news. I'm just telling you. For the week.
Oh, this qualifies?
You've cashed in.
Okay, I don't get to do the food news later in the week.
Especially fast food.
Red Lobster's new CEO says it's not just an internet rumor. The Endless Shrimp is what did the chain in. It is what caused Red Lobster to go bankrupt.
Huh. Endless Why did they just Shrimp. Stop Endless Shrimp?
They did, but they were already $11 million in the hole on it. And they were already struggling. And so they asked the new CEO, do you think Endless Shrimp could ever come back? His very quick answer, no.
I bet Trump could get it back. I'm just saying.
Ooh, Endless Shrimp. He needs to come out. No tax on tips, Endless Shrimp.
It'd be over before it started. Yeah.
Why even have an election?
This is a landslide. All the money on Trump.
Let's see here. The world's smallest Rubik's Cube has been unveiled this weekend. It is...
It's about freaking time.
Right? You get tired. The Rubik's Cube is so big.
You know? Like you're holding it in your hand. You're like, this is a waste of space. I could be doing other things with my hands, Brian.
Exactly. You could be doing lots of other things with your hands. And so Japanese toy maker Mega House has released an actual Rubik's Cube that is small enough to fit under your fingernail.
Finally.
So, yeah.
Some people are worried about the price of groceries, but... at least we have this.
Well, I have great news for you.
Yeah.
It's also very expensive.
Okay, so even better. But inflation.
The price is $5,320.
Say again?
$5,320.
What's it made out of?
For the Rubik's Cube made out of plastic that can fit under your
fingernail. Maybe like all the red spots on the thing were rubies
nope.
and...
Nope, that would make sense.
Can you even see it? I mean, under your fingernail. I mean,
that's
how do you,
the best part. How you do you? Can't.
How do you? How
it's
do you
totally
do it?
There. We totally
but you
shipped
hand
it
over
to you.
The thousands of dollars.
Yeah, I don't really get the small items thing, because if you're just ridiculously wealthy and you want to show off to your friends, fine, get something really expensive
and big
and big. Yeah.
Add this and to loud.
List, add this to the list of things Trump will make cheaper. You know, when he gets in office.
It's like, it's a very strange brag.
I do want to hear Donald Trump's thoughts on a super expensive but super tiny Rubik's
Heck
Cube.
Yeah. The minute he comes on the show, that's question number one. Agreed?
We're working on it. not on that. But yeah, thank you, Ryan.
You're welcome.
Food news crossed off your list for this week.
All right, fine.
You combined it. It's a combo deal.
I snuck it in.
For the low, low price of 12 minutes of your life that you'll never get back. Steve Moore in the next hour. Stick around. We'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.